Hello, and welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good, and I'm talking to you about Hearthstone as I'm driving home from the train station. It is February 27th, 2018. I was actually going to record an episode yesterday, but there's a new version of the Anchor app, which is what I use to record the podcast. And what's good about it is that it will not cut me off at 5 minutes anymore, so some of those kind of abrupt segment ends where I'm clearly rushing to get a thought in before the time runs out shouldn't happen anymore. The bad news is that I switched out to another app and it decided to stop working in the background and lost most of the episode. So it is, oh, well, you know, you're getting to enjoy the lovely sounds of Massachusetts. It's not, you know, delightful birds like Blister Guy has when he's walking to work. You get the honk of the Massachusetts driver. That's their meeting sound. Anyway, it's a good thing that I didn't record or release an episode yesterday, because today we got the announcement for the Year of the Raven. So happy Year of the Raven to all of you. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. I also want to give you a whirlwind tour of the wild meta, because the Brawliseum is expected to start tomorrow, and as I record this, I should also be releasing a wild crafting guide for standard players, which will be coming out in conjunction with a infographic that Blister Guy will be releasing of the wild meta and the crafting costs for some of the meta decks. So if you are someone who is predominantly played in standard, and you are interested in playing in Wild, and you haven't really tried it up to now, this should get you covered. And the good news is that it's actually a lot less expensive to play Wild than you might think, especially if you own or buy some of the adventures. And, you know, the guide will go into this, but a lot of the really critical Wild cards are common, so you can actually get in for relatively little dust if you have a fairly decent standard collection. So the guide will talk about that. I'll talk about that more in the Wild meta whirlwind tour as well. Really quickly, my ladder has not been going as well as I would have liked. I've basically given up on standard for the month. I'm at the rank 5 floor. I'm not expecting to get off of it. And most of it is, I kind of just got frustrated with the meta and I wanted to spend more time looking at Wild. So I'm double dad legend this month, which is nice. I'm at rank 5 in standard and I'm right now at like 2.3 in Wild. I did a stream on Sunday night of a deck that I kind of threw together on a whim, that was basically taking that Dragon Control Priest that I won't stop talking about and converted it to Wild. And the general premise being that Entomb is a better mind control and Light Bomb is a better Dragonfire Potion. And the rest of the cards in the deck are mostly still good, with some exceptions, except that some of the dragons are better. So I did that and it worked out really well. I went 6-1 on the stream. I'll put a link to that VOD in the show notes. And you can go check that out as well, including dismantling a couple of big priests, because I kind of know how that deck works a little bit. I also did one arena run in the wild arena. I've kind of been saving my gold up for the Brawliseum, so I didn't want to go too heavy into that. But I did one. My wife Maureen, generally when I do an arena run, I will do the draft along with my wife Maureen. She is a fairly accomplished player in her own right. She's actually at rank 10 this month. Really proud of her with the Spell Hunter. Especially given that she plays a lot less than I do. So I drafted a Blood of the Ancient One, and she convinced me to draft a Molten Reflection to go along with it. And lo and behold, I pulled it off. So I got to beat my opponent with a 30-30. So that was kind of fun. And then I basically figured I'd never get top that. So that was pretty much it right from there. Anyway, so I'm hoping to get to Legend in Wild tonight. That would be kind of interesting. I've never gotten to Wild before. I was hoping yesterday was going to go a little bit better, because I've kind of been like a little bit of a like 50-55% win rate last day or so since I did that stream. But I made some tweaks to the deck that I think will work out for me. So I'm going to try that. And, you know, if I do great, if not, then I knew that I was spending more time grinding both ladders than normal. So I'm okay if I don't get to Legend in one format or the other, because I kind of split my time to make sure that I wasn't going to be starting from zero in either format. So that's kind of an acceptable trade-off as far as I'm concerned. So, but enough about that. We have a lot of important things to discuss. We have to talk about the Year of the Raven. We have to talk about the Wild meta. So let's get to it. Okay, so we got the Year of the Raven announcement today. There's actually a few really interesting things going on in this announcement. One of them is that we're going to be getting a new Druid hero, finally. That's the one class that doesn't have an alt hero, and it's going to be Lunara, and I'm really excited because I've kind of been hoping it would be Lunara, and I've liked the character since they introduced her in Heroes of the Storm. I believe Lunara is actually not from Hearthstone, or not from World of Warcraft originally. Was kind of made up for Heroes of the Storm and then is being ported into Hearthstone. So I'm really excited. I like Lunara a lot. And it's nice to have a female druid, and I'm kind of sick of Malfurion, so, you know, change is good. They're going to be making quests a little bit easier. They're going to be reducing the requirements for quests and increasing the gold, which will be good for free-to-play players, because I know that that's been a concern for a while in terms of, like, how much gold it takes to keep up as a free-to-play player with all the extra sets that have been released. And, you know, just how long it takes to grind out. And also, you know, kind of reducing the requirements to complete them. So a 3-win quest will go to 2. A 50-class card quest will go to 30. That type of thing. So that's, I think that's a welcome change. Especially when, you know, you're just trying... When you don't necessarily want to spend a ton of time grinding out the quests, you just want to get them done. You know, making them a little bit easier to finish is always a good thing. So we'll have to figure out what the min-maxing on that looks like. We're getting a tournament mode, which is really exciting. I've not really done a whole lot in terms of tournaments, just because it's a lot of overhead and it's a lot of time. And I just don't have the energy to deal with it a lot of the time. Like, I did the Coinkitsy tournament a while ago, and that was fun. But even that was, like, a decent amount of overhead with coordinating and stuff like that. I just, you know, I would like to try it just to get the same experience that they're doing in esports, but it just seems like a lot of headache to, like, sign up for a third-party site and, you know, then do the whole friend dance, and then you have drama with screenshots and whatever, and being able to do all that all in the tournament, in a tournament mode, in client, seems really good. So they're going to be rolling that out in beta sometime over the course of the year, and that will be pretty exciting to try out. There's a PC Gamer article that I will link as well, in addition to the official blog post announcement, that has some more detail on that. That is, it spells out how more it's going to work, and also some of the thought process behind some of the Hall of Fame cards that got announced. So, you know, I've been... Okay, so Iceblock is rotating out. I don't think anybody was surprised by that. That was pretty much telegraphed by the dev team a while ago. I think it's probably a good thing for Standard. Just, it's one of those cards that makes people rage. A Primordial Glyph is still a card that can sometimes lead you to getting, like, 3 or 4 of them. And, you know, those kinds of non-interactive experiences, especially with the tools that they've added in Kobolds and Catacombs, in terms of, like, Arcane Artificer and even Frostless Shayna and some of the other defensive tools that you have. And I'm sure that this will also open them up to be able to build more mage defensive tools, because, like, anything in conjunction with Ice Block is probably just oppressive, and it probably will be in Wild, I would imagine. But at least as far as Standard is concerned, not having Ice Block in the format means that you can give mage more healing, or more, probably more armor, I would imagine. It seems like mage is a class that's getting predominantly armor gain rather than healing. So I would imagine that there are going to be more ways for you to generate armor as a mage, which would be... It would be interesting to be able to play a control mage that's not reliant on sticking an ice block. And that might also make big spell mage more of a real, you know, a real consistent archetype, because right now, big spell mage isn't really... Because you still have to run 2 copies of Ice Block to just not die. So that'll do things like make Dragon's Fury more consistent, and it'll let you kind of actually build the archetype the way it was intended, maybe even with Spiteful Summoner and stuff like that, and Arcane Tyrants and the whole nine yards. So that'll be fun. I've been pretty vocal about wanting Shadow Step to go to the Hall of Fame, and that is not happening, but Cold Light Oracle is. And I think that Cold Light Oracle, like, I think Shadow Step has other problems, but I think Cold Light Oracle is a big part of it. And, you know, the whole argument about what is a milrogue and what isn't, it's kind of irrelevant in terms of the fact that the combination of Shadow Step and Cold Light Oracle just lets you do too many abusive things, ultimately. And I know that there are some pro players who are saying that they're upset that it's one of the skill testing cards. First of all, they're going to introduce more skill testing cards. Like, we don't have to have the same skill testing cards for multiple years without any change. Like, I don't really like the argument that, you know, oh, well, these are skill testing cards. Like, they can build more, right? Like, Dirty Rat was a skill testing card too, and that's something that they introduced. And there are plenty of other ones that come into play, and I don't think removing a couple to make room for new ones is a bad thing. I think that the problem with Cold Light Oracle is mostly that it just feels bad a lot of the time. Like, it's ultimately, it's kind of a fair card, but the fact that you can, without too much trouble, turn the drawback into a benefit is... And a benefit that really is just a feels-bad type of thing. Like, everybody has their deck that tilts them more than others. And, you know, Milrogue or Kingsbane Rogue that happens to run Cold Light Oracles in conjunction with Vanish and Sap is something that just tilts me off the face of the planet, mainly because of the kinds of decks that I like to play, which are slow control decks that tend to hold a lot of cards in your hand. So it just makes it, like, impossible for me to play a kind of deck that I want to play. And also that those are typically the kinds of decks that are really only played around ranked floors. And the reason is that they just die to aggro. But, you know, when you're at rank 5 and you're not planning to climb, you can just sit there and watch the world burn, right? So, you know, when I'm trying to climb up with a control deck and I just run into that specifically, like, that my deck is never going to beat. It can kind of be a frustrating experience that I have to play, like, aggro to get off the floor, to get away from the Kingsbane Rogues. But, you know, I'm glad to see Cold Light Oracle going. I think that it's a card that gives... The reason that they gave for it, among other things, is that it's giving too many classes neutral card draw, which, you know, certain classes just shouldn't have. And I do agree with that. And it just seems like it's the kind of card that we've seen enough of. And they clearly don't want mill to be a viable strategy. The other card that's rotating out is something that I don't think anybody really talked about other than, you know, in passing, which is Molten Giant. And Molten Giant is going back to its original unnerfed mana cost and going to wild exclusively. So that means that you'll be able to play, like, actual Handlock in wild again. Now, this is a little bit irrelevant with the whole Naga Sea Witch situation, which we'll talk about in a minute, because Handlock isn't even really a deck, because why would you play Giants with a Defender of Argus when you can just spam six Giants onto the board? But what it will do is it'll let you kind of play that style of deck again, and it really shouldn't affect the Naga interaction too much, I don't think, because it's always going to go to 5 and you'll have to have lost 5 health in order to get it out for free. So it really doesn't make the Naga situation any worse. It just kind of makes it a wild exclusive thing, which is fine. I mean, Molten Giant really hasn't seen any play in Standard since the nerf anyway, so it's probably better for it to go and then, you know, to be able to build other things in its place. And I would argue that the free 8/8 era, I'm not sad to see it go. Like, seeing giant minions coming out for free, routinely, is not a super... It's not my favorite thing in the world. And I'm more than happy to see, like, free giant minions going away. And that goes along with Quarter Creeper. It goes for, you know, Molten Giant. And, you know, Arcane Giant is rotating out, everything else in between. So if you do not have these cards and you have dust, you probably should just go ahead and craft them, because you're going to get the dust back when the rotation happens anyway. Like, I may only have one Molten Giant. I certainly do not have two. So I may just go ahead and craft them. I've been thinking about crafting the rest of the Giants for, to try out Naga Sea Witch, Giants Warlock anyway. So that is something that I would recommend that you do. If you really want a card in Golden, you know, this is the time to do it because you'll get all that dust back refunded to you. So if you really want, like, Cold Light Oracles in Golden or Ice Blocks in Golden, I happen to have a Golden Ice Block that I just held on to, then, you know, go ahead and craft them because you'll get them in Golden and you'll get to keep them and get the dust back. I am actually surprised that Gadget and Auctioneer did not rotate, but, you know, Miracle hasn't really been a thing, and it's really only been using Raza Priest, which is no longer an issue, so maybe they feel like Miracle Rogue can stay around for another year. I'm not necessarily upset about that, because I like Miracle Rogue. As long as it's not like, and with Innervate having been nerfed, and Raza the Chain having been nerfed, like, Gadgets and Auctioneer is not nearly as oppressive in non-rogue classes. So, I'm kind of okay with that, too. I'm happy with these changes. I think I was surprised that there weren't more, but they also said in that interview that there are fewer cards that are really issues that they need to address from Standard, and maybe that's just kind of the way that it's going to be going forward, right? Is that, you know, we're not going to have as many cards go to the Hall of Fame because they're just addressing them. They're either nerfing them if they're basic cards, or they're rotating them if they're non-basic, but you just run out of those kinds of cards that you need to get rid of. They also made a statement that they might be pulling some cards in from older expansions to make up for the loss of Ice Block and Ice Lance in Mage, but they were talking about things like Shatter, so I wouldn't get too excited about that. But I'm really excited, and we should be, this now that we have the Hall of Fame announcement out of the way, I would expect that we probably are going to hear about the new set, like, any day now. So, I'm excited for that, too. Alright, so, let's talk about the wild meta for the Brawler scene that's coming up. And when we talk about this, I'm coming at this from the perspective, which is a Standard player that is really seriously dipping my toes into WoW for the first time. I mean, I've played some kind of towards the end of the season when I got bored with Standard after hitting Legend, or just as a change of pace to clear quests, but I've never really gotten above rank 10, and this is the first time that I'm even playing in the above rank 5 meta, so this is the first time I'm really taking it very seriously, and I think that I've put a bunch of games in, and I've been playing a few different things, and I've kind of got a handle on what the meta looks like, and there are things that are going to be different, but the thing that's really struck me is that, with only a couple of exceptions, a lot of the decks that are in Wild are fairly similar to the ones that are in Standard, with a couple of cards changed. There are a couple of unique ones, and the one that is really, I would go so far to say, is warping the meta. It is a completely unique deck to Wild that you really do need to be prepared for, because every deck that is played in the Wild meta right now is either tech to, is either this deck, or it's tech to beat it or counter it, basically. So that deck is, as I alluded to earlier, is Naga Sea Witch, Giants, Warlock. So if you've never played in Wild, you may be surprised that Naga Sea Witch is a card, because it was in League of Explorers forever, and it never saw play in Standard. And what happened is that after it rotated out of Standard, they made a change in the way it behaves to make it more consistent with the way the Bright-Eyed Scout works. And it's a, if you don't know what it is, it's an epic 5/5 neutral minion for 5 mana that says your cards cost 5 mana. And so what happens is that the change that they made is that it affects the starting mana cost for Giants now. So if you have, say, Mountain Giant, which gets discounted for every card in your hand, right? If you have a full hand with 9 other cards, it goes down to 3 mana. Well, if you have Naga Sea Witch out, instead of starting at 12 mana, it starts at 5. So if you have 5 cards in your hand, it's free. And the same thing goes for all of the other Giants. So typically what will happen is you will play against a Warlock who, for all intents and purposes, looks like a Cube Lock or a Control Warlock for the beginning. and they will just sit there and tap for the first couple of turns. And then maybe they'll play Mistress of Mixtures, maybe they'll play a Kobold Librarian, but they're always just tapping. They're drawing cards. And at some point, usually turn 5 or turn 6, they will drop a Naga Sea Witch and 3 or more giants, and good luck to you if you don't have an answer. So, obviously, a deck that does nothing for the first few turns is something that can be rushed down by aggro, or the control decks that are in the meta are ones that have an answer to a large board. So you will see Big Priest is a deck that exists in Wild because it can run Light Bomb. Druid is a deck that can exist as a control variant because it has Poison Seeds, which was a 4-mana spell from Curse of Naxxramas that never saw play in Naxxramas either, because at the time you just had Force Roar and Force of Nature Savage Roar, and that was pretty much the only kind of druid you would play. And that turns all of the minions on the board into 2/2 treants. So that's one way to basically answer the giant board. It's basically like a more consistent devolve. So that deck basically, that's it's like a one-trick pony, basically. I mean, it has some of the Q-block components to it. Q-block, by the way, in Wild, occasionally will run Skull of Minari, but typically doesn't. And it typically runs Void Callers instead, which is a 3-4 demon for 4 mana that has a death rattle that summons a demon from your hand and puts it into play. So that's a more efficient way to get things like Doomguards out of your hand. And that deck will also play Mal'Ganis, which is a 9-7 legendary minion for 9 mana that gives all your demons +2/+2 and makes your hero immune while it's in play. So that's played in both versions of Warlock. And in the Q-block version, sometimes it will get doubled and they'll each buff each other, like when you have 2 South Sea Captains on board. Straight Q-block will also play things like Sylvanas Windrunner, because stealing multiple minions is good. It'll play Emperor Thorason sometimes just to get everything cheaper. And it will just... A board full of Voidwalkers that have come out of a Void Lord that are all buffed by Mal'Ganis is pretty scary. So that's basically the boogeyman of the meta is the Giants Warlock, though Q-block does see play as well. And what you're going to see is a lot of Paladin, and a lot of different kinds of Paladin. So Murloc Paladin is a deck. It doesn't really need any explanation. If you've played Standard, you know what this is. It's basically the same thing in Wild. It runs Old Murkai, which is a 2/4 Murloc for 4 mana that gets +1 attack for each Murloc you have in play, but that's not necessary to play the deck. It just have... Oh, and it has Charge, by the way, because of course it does. So that's a more efficient deck that you can run. It also runs Shield and Minibot, which is a 2-mana 2/2 Divine Shield, because that's the kind of expansion that Goblins vs. Gnomes was. And Muster for Battle, which is a 3-mana spell that summons a 1/4 weapon and 3 Silverhand Recruits. And then, you know, I mean, that's the power level of Goblins vs. Gnomes. It was kind of ridiculous at the time. And so that will just run the rest of the Murloc shell and do Murloc things to you. There's also a mid-range or a Dude Paladin that will use all of those cards plus do it at Darkshire to give them all Divine Shield, plus Life Use Stegadon to adapt them, plus level up, plus Quartermaster, which is a 2/5 minion for 5 mana that will give all your Silverhand Recruits +2/+2, so it's like a level up with a body. There's also Secret Paladin, which plays one copy of each of the secrets. Some of them runs multiples. And then it runs Mysterious Challenger, which is a 6-mana 6/6 that puts one copy of each of your secrets into play. And one of the secrets that exists, if you don't remember the Secret Paladin era, lucky you, one of the secrets that exists in Wild that doesn't exist in Standard is Avenge, which is when a minion dies, give another surviving minion +3/+2. So typically what will happen is a Mysterious Challenger will come out, it will pull a copy of Avenge and Redemption and Competitive Spirit, which gives your board +1/+1, and Noble Sacrifice. So what happens is that it doesn't matter what your opponent does, they attack in, Noble Sacrifice triggers it, summons a 2/1, the 2/1 dies, it gets resurrected by Redemption, and then it buffs any other minion on your board, which is usually the Mysterious Challenger, and that becomes a 9-8. That is also sometimes paired with the Anything Can Happen package, which is a 10 mana spell from League of Explorers that will summon one of each of your Murlocs that died. So that will not run the full Murloc package that you see in Standard. That runs a very specific OTK package, which is Old Murkai, two copies of Bluegill Warrior, two copies of Murloc War Leader, and occasionally Finch of the Flying Star to get them out earlier, and then your goal is basically just to kill off one of each of those and then play Anything Can Happen. The first copy does somewhere between like 20 and 24 damage, and the second one generally does like 32. So that's enough to kill someone straight from hand. There's a little bit of variance because, you know, you generally, the second one has more minions on board than you have slots on the board that get resurrected. But it generally doesn't matter. And you don't need Old Murkai to play that, but you should not put in another Murloc if you do. I mean, the combo is less, but any Murloc that's not a charger just kind of dilutes the minion pool and takes up a spot on board. So that's Paladin in this meta. You are also seeing Aggro Shaman and Secret Mage, which both kind of behave the same way. Secret Mage is basically the same as in Standard. It just happens to run Mad Scientist that puts some of your secrets into play when it dies. Sometimes they'll run a couple more secrets and diversify them a little bit more because of that. They'll run Ice Lance, which does 4 damage if your target is frozen, to combine with Frostbolt to do some extra burst. And it also will run Forgotten Torch, which is a 3-mana, 3 direct damage spell that also will shuffle effectively a 3-mana fireball into your deck. So that gives you a lot of extra burst at the end. And if you get 2 of those in a fireball, that's 18 damage from hand. So, you know, Alaneth obviously combines with that. And you generally run a lot less of the other spells. Like, you don't generally run Glyph as often. You don't generally run Firelance Portal or Pyroblast. You just kind of put all the good spells, all the burn spells in, and then go to town. Aggro Shaman runs Tunnel Trog and Totem Golem. Tunnel Trog gets bigger for every mana crystal you overload. Totem Golem is a 2-mana 3-4 that overloads for 1, so those two are best friends. You run a lot of overload direct damage. You run Lava Burst, you run Lightning Bolt, you run Crackle, you run Jade Lightning. Those all pump up the Tunnel Trog, and those also do face damage. Typically, you'll run Doom Hammer and Rockbiter Weapon. And that gives you a lot of damage from hand as well. And so the general plan with both of those is you get chip damage in with the minions, and then you transition to Burning Face for the rest. They both work pretty well. So, you know, Hunter's around too, but Secret Hunter's kind of a thing. It's not quite as popular. And then as far as the control decks go, you typically will see Big Priest is also an option in Wild. It tends to run Ragnaros instead of Ysera, because why wouldn't you? Resurrect is also a card for 2 mana that resurrects a random minion. So what happens very often is you can get Barnes on 4 into double Resurrect on 5. And then you can hit your opponent in the face for 16 from Ragnaros shots. It's fairly effective. I find that it's a little bit more high-roll-y than the Standard version, because those Resurrects are really dead cards until you summon a minion. And especially with a lot of Secret Mage in the meta, sometimes that's difficult early, because, you know, your Shadow Essences can get countered, and it also leaves you fewer slots for actual removal. But it's a popular deck because Ragnaros is a fun card, and hitting people in the face with Ragnaros repeatedly is a fun thing to do. And it's not bad. It's just not. I find it's a little bit less potent than the Standard version. But when it works, it really works. You also have OTK Druid, because Aviana is a card that exists in Wild. So Aviana is a 9-mana minion that makes all of your minions cost 1. So typically you will play Aviana, followed up by Kun the Forgotten King, which refreshes your mana crystals, and then you basically just go to town after that. So the current version, there have been a few different versions of the OTK. This one utilizes a combination of Maligos and Ixalid, the Fungal Lord. So Maligos comes down, Ixalid copies it. Sometimes you have Faceless Manipulators thrown in for good measure, and then you swipe face for 24. And you have moon fires and stuff like that. And then you just kind of have spreading plagues and poison seeds and a lot of stuff just to control the board to let you stall. But if you see a druid that's not clearly jade, because jade druid is a thing and it's basically the same as in standard except with poison seeds, then I would expect an OTK and you know, act accordingly. You generally want to try to rush them down as best you can. What am I missing? I feel like I'm missing like one or two other decks, but that's a lot of it. I mean, you don't really even really see like Freeze Mage. Sometimes you see Pirate Warrior, because you can play Ship's Cannon, but that's not super popular. That's actually pretty much all. Oh, there's also Interfire Combo Priest, like there is in Standard, except that you have cards like Felon Chosen, which give it +2/+4. You have Death Lords, which start out as a 2/8. You have dragons that Twilight Guardian that starts as a 3/6. So you have bigger minions that you can use to hit base better. But otherwise, it basically just behaves the same way that it does in Standard. So that's basically it. Those are the decks that you should expect to see. I would say if you're looking for a really simple way to get in, I would say Secret Mage is very potent. Aggro Shaman is fun if you're familiar with the way to play it. And you can probably just take your Murloc Paladin deck that you have in Standard. If you're playing Murloc Paladin or Dew Paladin, transition it over with some wild cards and probably be good to go. So those would be my recommendations. I also have a version of the Control Dragon Priest, as I said, that I'm working on refining, and it seems to target everything most of the time. So I'm looking to make that a little bit better, but that's what you should expect in the wild meta. So don't be intimidated. You probably already know how to play most of the decks, so just go ahead and go into it and spend some gold and kick some butts. All right, so that's it for this week. As always, you can find all the show notes for this show and every show and all the links that I talked about at offcurve.com, where I will have the wild crafting guide for Standard players, and I also put up a dusting guide for the cards that are rotating out from the sets that are going away at the end of the year, the Mammoth, that you can check out at offcurve.com as well. So go check both of those out. Those are available at offcurve.com. You can also follow at offcurve on Twitter if you just want show announcements and when I post written content like that goes up on that blog page. If you want to follow me and all of my nonsense, you can follow me on Twitter at WickedGood. You can follow me on Twitch as well. I've been streaming most weekends, and I've been trying to stream once during the week, infrequently, which is WickedGoodFM. And you can also follow my YouTube channel. There's a link from offcurve.com as well. And if you are feeling so kind as to leave a review on iTunes, it helps people find the show a lot. It's very helpful. And if you happen to make that review 5 stars, that is even more appreciated. And my battle tag is WickedGood, #1535. Please do let me know in Twitter or in some Discord, or like direct messages in Discord, whatever, that it's you, so that I will accept it, because I'm not accepting any more friend requests from people who I don't know are actually listeners, both because I'm running out of room and also because I don't want to be indulging anyone's salt fests after I beat them with a Control Priest, which generally makes people salty. I don't know why that is, but that kind of happens. I can't imagine why. Thank you, as always, for listening. I really do appreciate it. I've been getting a bunch of people on my stream and hanging out. I've been having a lot of fun there, and it really does, make me happy that I'm contributing enough to the community that you all are taking the time to listen to this and to come watch me stream and stuff like that. It does mean a lot. So thank you. I wish you all the best and have a great week on ladder. Good luck with your end of the season pushes, and I will talk to you next week. Have a good one.